lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they caught the last train for the coast on the day the music died. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio. This is episode 261. This is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of, guess what? Songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me are the meteorological members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We got Flood Watch Phil.
I'm here keeping a watchful eye on the waters.
Very good. Thank you, Phil. And we've got Monsoon Michael.
It's raining men.
That's right. And welcome to Michael. Nice. This is his first time being a host on the show, so welcome aboard, Michael.
Thank you.
Don't be nervous, Michael.
And on social media tonight, we have Vortex Vanessa.
Hi.
Polar Vortex.
She didn't seem to be all that impressed by
she
that.
She has
one.
To be the center of attention. You
I
know?
Feel like the Vortex one has been used before.
It probably has. I have to recycle some words. There's only so many words. 300 shows.
In a meteorological sense or in any sense?
Any sense, okay. And finally on the tech board, we have Lightning Linda.
All right, Lightning Linda.
Yay.
During the show, please send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter or Facebook or feedback @songtalk.ca, and we'll share them in the with the audience in real time, or as real time as we can.
Yes, and if you're going to send us a tweet, though, make sure you do @SongTalkRadio, because if you don't do that, we won't see it.
That's what I said.
Yep.
And please stop by our website, songtalk.ca. Find out how you can be a guest on our show. Mr. Patrick Ballantyne is a singer-songwriter, perhaps best known for his collaborations with Gordy Johnson and Big Sugar, The Trues, Meredith Shaw, and Tim Chasen. He's also released two solo albums, Patrick Ballantyne and Days of Rain, and was the Now Reader's Choice winner for Songwriter of the Year in 2014. Patrick is a frequent co-host on Song Talk Radio, and today he's brought two of his original songs from his forthcoming album, Sky, to talk about over the next hour. Great to have you back again, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Welcome,
thank
Patrick.
You.
Yeah,
so, Patrick, you've been pretty consistent in your output. Like, you put out an album almost every other year, I'd seen.
Well, the first one was 2008, when I was not young. And every couple of years after that, I have actually three out now.
Oh, really? Okay.
With a new one coming out May 31st, okay. And I just wanted to say that I think I dated somebody. I think I went to the prom with Lightning Linda. No, Fast Linda.
Fast Linda.
Sorry, Fast Linda.
Lightning Linda is way faster than
Fast Linda. Yeah, all right. Sorry, yeah.
It's true.
So, much more dangerous.
Well, yeah.
So are you actually – do you have sort of like a schedule where you're writing songs like every week? Or how's it
working? I wish it would. No, it the first one came about really as just a bunch of songs that I had – floating around that I wanted to record, just because otherwise they just sort of sit in the basement. It was more like a sort of a publisher sort of demo sort of thing. The second one was constructed much more in a much more focused way as an album from beginning to end. I wrote it more or less with it being an album. The third one, which was called Calendar, was a result of that thing I did a couple of years back called the Song of the Month, Hit a Month.
I put
a different song out every month. I wrote it, produced it, or recorded it and half-produced it. And that's where Calendar came from. As when we finished the project, it turned out that we could assemble it into something that looked like an album and sounded reasonably coherent. So we put that out. And that was about a year and a half ago now. These songs that are on the new album, and thank you for mentioning it, Sky, some of them have been floating around for a while. Some of them have been are relatively new. But generally speaking, they have not ever been finished. They were just songs that were lingering. But they had a bit of a common theme of as with Days of Rain, which was kind of a dark and album of loss. This one is almost of longing. And don't ask me what it's longing for, but that is really, it's like there's a reach to the songs. It's like I'm not, and they all seem to be connected in that way. And it's very, to me, as I listen to it now, it's a very insular sounding album. It's very closed. Hmm. It's not Steely Dan.
Is that actually something you go ahead, like you said, I'm going to do an album next year and it's going to be this kind of thematic thing? Or is you just sort of start selecting some songs and let it be what it's going to be? Or is it?
I think it's more the latter. Yeah. I don't think I would
afterwards that they're songs of longing?
Yeah.
Or did you gather songs of longing together for this?
I think it was just the songs that I was hearing as part of this package all fit into that category. I don't know that I deliberately wrote songs that way.
Do you actually go back and, like, would you kick out a song maybe that didn't quite fit the bill after you picked it? Like,
I think as I was putting it together, I sort of knew how it was going to go from beginning to end. I certainly knew how it was going to start. I knew how it was going to end.
Right.
And when I was sort of trying to identify songs that would fit, they just sort of naturally happened. It wasn't really I didn't have like a surplus of songs at the time. I used to have a pile of songs that were ready to go. Mm. Now it seems that I've fallen off of that I have a lot of parts of songs that I lack the drive to finish.
Is that a good thing about having it, doing a CD? Because it actually makes you finish stuff up.
That, I think we've talked about this before, but that whole song of "So They Hit a Month" nonsense was brilliant for that because it forced you to finish it up.
Yeah.
And you look back at it now and you think, yeah, that one worked. That one maybe not so much. I wish I had that decision to do over again. And turning it into an album helped because I was able to go back and clean up some of the mixes or clean up a part or whatever, but just to make it sort of more tolerable to me. Mm. And, you know, we were talking about songwriting tips earlier. That's going to be my main one. This album is for me. I mean, this every song I write is really trying to please myself because I can't guess how to please other people, right? If it lands on them and it resonates a certain way, that's awesome. And that's what I aspire to at the end of the day. But I can't try deliberately to write that way because I'll never get anywhere. I think it'll just sound contrived.
Mm-hmm. You've been on the show before talking about collaborations. You collaborated with lots of different people.
Yeah.
For your solo albums, do you collaborate with anybody or are they all you?
Well, yeah, I do. There's two co-writes, Vicious and Vanity, which I think we're going to play. This is the recorded version of it, which I wrote with Colin McDonald of The Trues. This came – I had the music and the structure in my mind and some of the words. Colin and I at the time were both part of a group called The Collaborators, which is 8 songwriters who get together and sort of co-write with different combinations and permutations.
Right.
Huh. And Blair is part of that and Roseanne Thornley and David Lee – And anyway, Colin and I were put together to write this. And so I brought this song to him and he restructured it a little bit and wrote a good part of the lyrics. And so that's where so there's your co-write right there. And there's one other song on the album.
Is that song maybe going to end up on a Trues album as well?
I would love it if it would. That was my hope.
There was one song on your Days of Rain that you wrote with Meredith Shaw that she put it on her album as well.
Colin and I also wrote a song on that album together as well. So I don't know. I don't know. It would be great if it would get picked up by the Trues or by somebody else. Mm. I think it's a good song. I wouldn't be playing it if I didn't think it was a good song.
Yeah.
You never know again how it's going to land and who's going to hear it and sort of get excited about it or not get excited about it.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was wanting to mention is as most people in this room are not teenagers.
You can be so cruel.
Writing lyrics is a very different thing. When you're 20 and you're full of angst and heartbreak and, you know, you can sort of – lyrics sort of come out of nowhere. Where now it's sort of a different process about writing, I think, lyrics that kind of resonate, you know, because you're not theoretically getting your heart broken. I mean, you might have other issues like maybe watching your children grow
like
up.
Like having a broken heart.
You might not be.
I got divorced when I was 35.
I'm still full of angst and heartbreak.
No, that's true, yeah.
No, but I know you take your point. I was just laughing. It's not about having a broken heart. It's about having a heart that's no longer functioning properly.
That's right. Got a pacemaker.
I got two stents.
Ha, 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 he says, whistling by the graveyard. I don't know. I don't know where you guys get your inspiration from. But I do agree that it's easy enough to write songs about heartbreak or how you're feeling or about being in love. Maybe it's just because when you're young, you're not as concerned about how you're portraying yourself. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you're just more open and you're open to sharing. And God knows, you know the kids now with the Instagram and everything, every breath they take is being
shared.
That is true,
yeah.
That wasn't the same back in the 50s, but or the 60s when all the kids were writing songs. But still, maybe it's easier to share when they're that young. I mean, maybe we have fewer secrets. You know, now I don't really know how to write lyrics anymore. I find that I will have music, and oftentimes the lyrics are the last thing I do. And the only reason I sit and write lyrics is because if I don't, the song ain't going to get done.
Yeah.
And is this new, or were you always?
This seems to be the case in the last number of years. I don't recall having a problem writing lyrics before, and I don't think I'm throwing lyrics out there just for the sake of having words on the page. Mm. I think there's still some craft going into it. I think there's still an honest representation of how I feel on that particular day or in that particular moment or in that particular situation. So I still am able to let down my guard and share lyrics. Mm. But maybe I'm not always as open about what the inspiration is.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, honestly don't know. Half of the time. That's funny. I'm thinking about the Big Sugar collaboration, but when I wrote with Gordy generally wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
Which is an odd thing. I mean, I wrote a lot of the music and Gordy wrote the lyrics, so you would think it would be the opposite.
Yeah.
With Tim, there's something about the way he writes and the melodies he writes that I could quite literally just listen to it on the fly and write lyrics. Melody suggests words and
rhythms or fit into your heartbeat or something.
Absolutely. There's something about the way he operates that really resonates so beautifully with me. Anyway, I don't know. I lyrics are my biggest challenge right now. So I'm interested in anybody else's perspective, anybody who might be listening, and certainly your perspective on how you shake that tree a little bit more.
Well, as a segue, I was interested in the lyrics of one of the songs you were bringing tonight, so maybe we take a listen to it.
Yeah,
and then we can
listen to it. This is Vicious in Your Vanity by Patrick Ballantyne and who was the Colin?
Colin McDonald.
Colin McDonald of the Trues.
You wanna say, hear what you wanna hear. You tell your friends anything about why I disappear. Hey, keep it simple for my sanity. We had so much in you. So light.
Vicious in Your Vanity by Patrick Ballantyne and Colin McDonald.
Yeah, brilliant.
I think that was
track.
A premiere. First yes, time you heard it.
Yes, first, I'm, boys and girls. I'm sitting here shaking because I hadn't played it for anybody outside before. So
I like the way it ended.
Yeah, like sort of I always like it when they end too.
Yeah, at least, well. Yeah. You know how they just sort of like, you know, it's kind of, it's that sort of unpolished sort of stopping.
Well, the one thing about this record, actually, there is no mix of this album right now that is not only one file. The entire album is assembled from beginning to end as one track.
So there's no breaks.
There's
in
no
the
breaks.
Cool.
It is all sort of linked together. So there was a bit of an odd.
I heard that at the beginning and at the end.
At the end, yeah. So it all does flow into one another. I think
cool. And why is that?
That's how I heard it. That's how I heard it. I worked hard. Yeah, the songs sort of bleed into the next.
So did you map that out?
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of the keys,
between songs and things.
Yeah, there was a couple of spots there where it's just total luck where by doing this, it just goes to that. It was like so much fun to do it.
Was something I wanted to ask you about conceiving the album. So did one song, like did they exist as separate discrete units, or did you kind of nudge them a little bit to fit together better? Or
they existed as discrete units, but I did fashion them in the recording process so that they would fit together.
But you fashioned them, you didn't change chords, lyrics,
no,
anything like that?
No. At the beginning or the end, I might add this or add that.
But not tempo or anything drastic?
No. Although there's a lesson for there's another lesson for you. Tempo is important because there was one track on here, which I don't think, we're not playing tonight, obviously, where it never sat right with me, but it sounded good. I liked everything about it, except it just didn't seem to have the right groove. Mm. And by speeding it up, the old Beatle trick. I just sped it up about 3%.
Oh, okay.
And it made all the difference in the world. All of a sudden, and not only did it sound.
You sped up the recording.
The recording of it.
Right.
Including, you can have it, you have a choice. You can speed up just
the tempo.
The tempo, or you can speed up the vocal, like the pitch.
Yeah.
I did everything. Mm. And it just, all of a sudden, it just sat better. The groove was better. Mm. And somehow or other, the mix changed a little bit. So it just seemed like it was glued together a little bit more. But anyway, experiment. Yeah, I'm sure that's why, you know, Beatles, for example, would always play with speed.
When you do that, if you increase it by 3%, then it's no longer tuned to A440.
It is no longer A440, no.
Nice.
So
good luck playing along at home.
Exactly. I was like, why is everything on?
Well, that's true enough. When I do play it, that was only because it wasn't fast enough to begin with, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one of the challenges of working on your own with a DAW is that, you know, when you're playing in a band and you have a drummer and a bass player, you know, sometimes you'll sort of find that magic the tempo, just because people happen to be playing in that right way. And if you're smart, you'll make a note of what that tempo is, but we never are.
You're dead right. I mean, and that's the advantage of having people to play with, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to feed off each other that way. But again, this is it. Like I said, this record is kind of insular. It's all largely all me.
So it's recorded track by track, nothing.
Yeah. There's only a few where there's some added parts. I think the Oches are on one of the tracks, for example. But other than that, it's just me. So I had nothing to react against except my own imagination or my own vision about how I wanted it to sound like. But you do. You miss that. And even when I tried to play it live, which I haven't really done a lot. I haven't actually played a guitar in front of people in a year, a year. When you start working it that way, you start adjusting the performance a little bit because it sounds better way, but you don't think of it when you're actually in the middle of recording it.
So can we talk about the process for the song a little bit? How did it start? I always like the lyrics last.
I had an entire recording of it done with lyrics, but they weren't meant to be keepers.
So you had the melody.
I had the melody. I had some lines that I liked, but for the most part, the lyrics weren't great, so I always just sort of set it aside and I'll get back to it. And I really liked it. I thought there was parts to it that were very cool.
A really good tip. This is something I've been embracing more recently, is give yourself permission to do a bad first draft.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Like, just whip through it as best you can, whatever it is, and you can always go back and change it. It does not have to be perfect.
I give myself permission to do a bad seventh and eighth draft.
Yeah, you know? That too.
You know,
even just in life.
Yes.
Full of bad drafts.
You know, we're kidding, but I had the luxury of time. I could take as much time as I wanted to.
Yeah.
Then the challenge there is that sometimes you really get hooked on your initial take.
Yes.
You know, flaws and all. It's either because you're lazy or because you genuinely like it. I haven't decided what it is. You can stick to that. I didn't bring them recording of the song to Colin. I just brought my guitar and said, this is what it sounds like. And he heard it. And as is often the case, he thought, well, the chorus is actually the bridge. You know, and so let's try
that. So your bridge was actually.
Yeah. So I think that's. Yeah, that's what it was. So he switched this around, and he had he pulled out his book of lines that he I don't know whether you guys do, but he, you know, Colin is a consummate songwriter. He's so good, and Colin had his book of lines that he writes down when he that's cool. And I think Vicious New Vanity was one of those lines that seemed to fit. So.
I wanted to talk about the structure, because it's an interesting structure. So it's verse, chorus, verse, double chorus, and then a bridge.
Another chorus.
Is it a verse or a chorus? But it's a different
structure.
Yeah,
it's an abbreviated structure just for editing. It's just to make it move a little bit quicker.
Right, because it was interesting, because I was trying to figure out what that was. Because it was sort of like a solo on a verse? Form, or is it the chorus?
It's over the verse, but it's a variation of the verse.
Yeah, because the chords are different.
Yeah, it's a variation of the verse. Yeah, it's actually quite a bit different. It starts off the same, but it moves in a very different direction.
Yeah, which I thought was quite neat.
Yeah.
And then you have your chorus, which is like sort of that, which is a really nice technique of having a chorus, but it's very kind of low key, very kind of quiet, you know, low energy. Mm-hmm. And then repeating the chorus sort of at full verse, at full energy.
Yeah.
Then you have another part at the end, which is really cool, which most people don't do.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a bit of Layla, because, of course, Layla has that second thing recorded
that's true.
Afterwards. But
it's often the thing when you're performing this song live, like with the backing band, and that end section could be like the jam section where someone just be wailing away.
But let's talk about that end section. That was an interesting decision.
The end section?
The end section,
Honestly, all I can say is that it just felt like the right thing to put at the end of the song. I didn't sit there and think, oh, I'm going to put a cool jam section at the end of it or anything like that. It was just, as I was playing it on the guitar, that's just what came out. In this case, the pedal steel, I think, dictated the structure to some extent.
I wasn't expecting the pedal steel.
No, nobody expects the pedal steel. Nobody. But to me, that's what makes this song cool. Is that, and I don't know if you heard it in here, but there's the two main instruments are the pedal steel and a mellotron. The mellotron parts are sort of more in the background. There's like choral parts instead of background vocals. Those sort of take the place of background vocals. But as for the end, no, it's just I don't know. I don't really know why it's there, but it's just felt like the right thing to do.
Cool.
Sorry.
I wish it came kind of as is.
Yeah.
You didn't play around much with it.
The first part, the end of it. Well, like I say, when I wrote it originally, I had a structure of it. When I wrote it with Colin, the structure changed a little bit. But I mean, it didn't turn into that quite. I mean, that like the odd structured solo section came out, because otherwise it felt like it was dragging on too long. So I said, okay, how can I edit that to move it along a little bit?
Because there's a lot of parts of this song, and there's a song I've been working on for a while, and it was a real fun song to write because it has all my favorite bits of things I like to do.
Yes.
But I'm always going between, wow, this is a really good song, and wow, there's far too many points, there's far too many parts, because there's not enough repetition for the verses to get established.
Yeah.
Become, you know, it's an interesting balance point.
I hope that thematically each part here is sounds like it belongs. Like
it doesn't have an identity crisis.
Yeah, you know, like it's still balanced, flows. Yeah.
It totally flows. Yeah.
But I never really thought of it, all the different parts that were structured together. So that's interesting.
It's interesting stuff.
Yeah. Okay, and so speaking of the little bits, we're going to be back right after these couple of little bits.
For those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio, streamed on songtalk.ca. And tonight, our guest is Patrick Ballantyne.
Woo!
Yay, Patrick! Don't forget, now, we'd love to hear from you. So tweet your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via the email at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts here on the show. So please.
Except Mr. Trump's thoughts. If he tweets about this show, we're not going to repeat it.
Oh, that's no. I'll retweet it. Sure. It depends what he says. Yeah. You can also find links to all the products, books, web services that we mention on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. Coming up on upcoming Song Talk Radio shows, April 2nd, Emmanuel Lopez with tips on social media for musicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
And on April 9th, the Toronto indie rock band One in the Chamber. And also, if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next songwriters meetup on Thursday, April 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transact Club up on Bloor Street, Bloor and Brunswick. It's free to join and free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link to the songwriters meetup.
All right. So, how many folk musicians does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know. How many?
Seven. One to change and the other six to sing about how good the old one was.
There you go.
But we got in a tweet, and we love to have tweets in from Sharon.
From Trump?
No.
Little Sharon.
Sharon
that's
Trump. Sharon.
He listens to the repeat broadcast.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
He subscribed to the podcast.
Yeah. Listening to music often works to help you out of writer's block when I'm working on essays, but not sure if that would work for lyrics. Maybe read essays.
Why not? You know what? You can take inspiration from anywhere, or a book or a novel. I mean,
or the news.
Well, I avoid. You could get it from anywhere,
definitely,
for sure.
But
for sure.
I think writer's block.
Retreat to your shell.
If you are suffering from writer's block, I think it's because your gas tank is empty. So you have to listen to different stuff. You have to experience art. You have to fill it up with more stuff again. Right. I think.
Retill the earth.
Or get out and live a life. That's another thing too.
Get a life.
You put yourself in harm's way. You might have some things.
That's one of those. That's one of those writer's block tips. Like try something you've never tried before. Well, just go do something that you've never done before,
and do it differently.
See,
I don't know what I was talking about earlier. Pardon me. Whether I would consider it writer's block per se, or just not really having much to write about.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't know. What are you doing on the show then, Patrick? The song starts with it. The album actually starts with a short instrumental. Yeah, so, yeah.
But you're talking about someone like Colin McDonald, who's constantly writing down these little tidbits, and whether they become songs or not, you're constantly sort of analyzing things in your life and saying, that might make a song, that might make a song.
Absolutely. And a lot of times I will walk down the street and occasionally with a melody, but more often with a lyric or something that will pop into my head, and I will sing it into the phone, or I'll stop and I'll type it into the phone. My phone is filled, as with most of you, mm-hmm. with songwriting mm-hmm. ideas, yeah. and not all of them are musical. Some of them are lines or what have you, mm-hmm. and even one line sometimes. If you know what you want to write about in the song, what is it about? That can help.
Yeah,
but without that, then you're just sort of throwing lines out there. Yeah. Now that said, I will up the cake from then, and I don't play so long and all again. And I will sing that into the microphone because that's the melody I hear.
Right,
and then I will actually go back and listen to what I just mumbled and write it out. I can say, okay, that sounds like. Write the words down. And that will get you going too sometimes sometimes for me it's not the words but the sound of the words that's as important.
And the
feeling of it.
So sounds good to sing an E here.
Well, that's true, right? So if you do that, that can shake you up a little bit and at least get some words out. But I forgot about that. I do that do that a lot. And that can be fun because sometimes you say things that are pretty good.
There's that famous Swedish songwriter who does all the like Katy Perry stuff and all the big hits. Nice. And he doesn't actually speaks English, but he writes English because he writes the words because of how they sound.
Yeah.
Which is a totally different way of approaching it.
I love the sound and the feeling of words at least as much as I like what the actual words are.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I was such a Yes fan when I was in the 70s, right? Those lyrics were just the weirdest things ever. Yeah. But boy, they sounded good. Yeah.
Oasis. I mean, I never know what the heck Oasis is on.
He has utter contempt for lyrics. He doesn't care what he sings. Yeah. It's not what he writes.
I mean, you often hear, what was it? R.E.M.'s Losing My Religion or something. Mm-hmm. He even admitted that it was just nonsense. He just liked the sound of the words. That's all.
Well, yeah. I'd like to say that everything that I write is genius, but, I can tell you that on, one or two of the songs on I keep telling myself I'll come back to it later and put the right word in there or the right line. But at some point, you got to move on. And then that's what we were talking about earlier. Without a deadline, you're
killing yourself. Right.
Yeah, that's a date. Okay. Yeah,
having too much time and too much money and too much. Drugs. Yeah. Forget it.
That was a good thing about being in the studio back in the day because you would be in there for like 2 days, and you do a
time's up.
Yeah, and it's well, it's, that yeah. wasn't a perfect guitar take, but that's all we got time for. And
similarly, multi-track studios will kill you too because you've got an infinite number of tracks.
Yeah,
right?
Let's try it this way.
Yeah, and when I was
make
a kid,
a
I would. When I was a kid, you're recording with, as we all did, with the 4-track cassettes or whatever. You kind of had to make a commitment to how that song was going to get mixed.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of time, let's take a listen to Beneath Your Skin. Can you tell us something about the process behind this song?
Nope.
What we should be listening for?
Nope. I think
I wasn't paying attention.
This was. I don't really. I don't know. I don't know where this comes from. But
is there a linchpin to it, even musically? Something that go, okay, this is what made this song, and this is what made me think this was a solid piece.
Nope.
You're the worst guest.
I know. I know. I am. This is. I wrote this because I had to. It's as simple as that. I wrote this because it just came out, and this is one of those songs that just came out more or less fully formed.
So it was in your head, and it just
came out, and structurally, it's as simple and repetitive as the other one wasn't.
Mm. Right.
But it's I like the lyrics of it. I like the imagery of it. I guess to some extent it's that longing, the proverbial two ships passing in the night, but one of those ships is going over the cliff and or going over the falls, and the other one is heading toward, you know, safety and so there's a little bit of that here, but I did not consciously try to write anything in a particular way. This is just something that came up. Is that okay, or do I have to leave now?
No, that's good.
Fired.
That's what Plato says. The ideas are just up there, and you grab them and pull them down.
So those guitar tuners, apparently. In a bourbon haze, I gaze at you. See amazing times ahead for you and me. Such amazing times I see. And rhymes are racing through my mind, but my words instead are foolish hidden messages for you to grasp. And will I have the nerve to ask to touch your skin? Touch your skin. We're sitting across the table and you smile as the room is spinning. Your eyes are alive with light and I dream that we're alone tonight. I want to kiss your eyes and taste your lips and feel your breast against my chest. In your hands, my hands. Nothing in between us, just skin, just skin. A thousand kisses down your back, each so soft and everlasting, each a burning drop of wax. Cannot stop, I can't relax. Like angels falling from the sky, till suddenly and heroically you're reaching out, you rein them in. Reaching out as I crawl in your skin. Your skin. Do you ever see the me I see when I'm alone and I feel alone, alone and long to look at you? Oh God, I love to look at you. You're miles ahead and happy with your life, and life ahead is rich, amazing time ahead. As I begin a dream of falling deep within your skin. Your skin. Your skin.
Yeah.
Ooh. Beneath Your Skin by Patrick Ballantyne.
Thank you.
And that was a solo, right? The way you were describing it. Yeah, that was written.
Yes. Yes.
Amazing. Yeah, lyrically much clearer than your first song, for sure.
Well, I'm not even certain, but I didn't have as much of a hand in the lyrics in the first one. I think a lot of those were Collins' lyrics, so I'm not 100% certain what was going through his mind at the time. Colin will probably able to write from more of an angry position than I generally will write.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't say that. I've never talked to him about it, but as I think about it, he can have a bit more of that.
So when you're co-writing with Colin, it's never you guys don't have like deep discussions about life philosophy, everything. He just sort of throws some words out and it's either
what sounds good.
What sounds good.
Let's write a good song.
You never question anything.
No. No. No, I would never question Colin. He knows what he's doing.
No, not question.
No,
not,
I know.
Not question. That's to doubt. But like, where did that come from? Because that was.
You're
kind of,
because
was
you're curious.
Yeah, because you're curious.
No, for sure. No, it. Again, it just sounded good. So
you go with it.
Go with it.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool song. And using the butts, you know, the skin as being that sort of the tagline that you kind of focus on.
Yeah.
An interesting way of like almost these sort of run-on sentences for your verses, which I thought was really cool. And it's so this seems like it to me. This is like a love. This is like a love song to someone. Like from what I've heard about, this is like talking about someone you love, and obviously the third verse is about having sex.
No, never.
in a song?
No. Could never be that. No, I would never write about that.
That would be terrible.
Never write.
Especially because, you've changed. I know you changed the word on this performance, but on the lyrics that you sent to us, and which are available on the show notes, the last line of the third verse is screaming out as I crawl in your skin.
Ah, yes, I forgot about that.
Yes,
song.
which is a wonderful line.
Yes, I never
and I thought
about
it was quite.
It.
Yes.
Like I say, I haven't played in a
quite
while.
Clear
so,
it is. Yeah. Yes. And I like the way you had a break, actually. I mean, it's still, you didn't have a traditional verse chorus. I mean, the, you know, nothing in between us but skin, that's kind of like your tagline.
Yeah.
But then you had a nice sort of break, though. You still had that sort of palate cleanser of a change so that you could come back in, you know, to the last verse.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I do think about this song and maybe the clearest indication of where the song comes from is the first line about it, you know, you're kind of drunk in a bourbon haze.
Yeah.
It's really kind of dreamy. I mean, there's nothing actually happening in these first three verses is actually happening.
No.
You know, this was just, you know, more aspirational than anything else.
Right.
The last verse is more of a, you know, the reality check, you know, that I'm just dreaming all this is happening. You're doing wonderful things and here I am, you know, just dreaming of what could be, right? So I think that's probably
it's got a great sense of yearning. It's got a kind of a confessional feel. Now, maybe that was because it was more intimate playing on a single instrument here. How is it? What's the produced version like? Does it still have that kind of mood?
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly dreamy. I try not to push it too hard because it is kind of a dreamy song.
I'm going to try listening to a rocker.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. You know, but there, are, you know, again, the Mellotron comes into play and the and sort of the haunting. The sounds that are there are more haunted than even the organ has got more of a not funeral feel, but funereal or whatever.
It's
trying to evoke a bit of a mood.
So I just want to ask you about rhymes because I know you said the songs are sort of poured out of you, but at no point did you ever think like there's not a lot of rhyming in here, and if the rhymes happen, they're very soft, and it doesn't come across that way. Is that something that you're kind of conscious of, or? Did you end up sort of writing some perfect rhymes and say no, this isn't going to fit with that song and change that lyric?
If there aren't a lot of rhymes, I hadn't really noticed it. In all honesty,
yeah.
I know that rhythmically, the words are chosen very carefully, because it does like you were saying, it's almost like a run on thing. But
it's almost like a stream of consciousness. Kind
exactly,
of thing, right?
And I think that's where it works. And there is, I think, a fair amount of alliteration that I've tried to employ as well. Maybe not a fair amount, but at least
There's internal rhymes and like
yeah.
You don't feel a lack of rhyming.
There's not necessarily a lack of rhyming, but there's no kind of set structure to it. Then we have pop song. Which
Kind of it's not an A-B sort of thing. No, it isn't. It really is kind of
a little bit here and a little bit there and kind of almost random.
Yeah, I mean, I would not hold this up as a template for how to write a song. And in many ways, it's how not to write a song.
Yeah.
But it's that thing about, you know, once you know the rules, you can break them.
Yeah.
And I think I know enough about how to structure it that I could do something like this and still have it make sense. And when you hear it, it doesn't. It's not jarring.
The feeling come through clearly, and that's the main point.
Which seems to be the theme tonight, isn't it, really?
But even in terms of the rhythm and the flow of it, like even as much as it is a bunch of run-on sentences, you still got that tag line at the end.
Yeah.
Something like that, in your skin. Now,
And the other thing that I actually just noticed recently about it is that it – sorry, I keep drifting away from the mic – melodically, it's almost hanging on one note through a good part of the verse. There's just not a whole lot of movement.
Yeah.
Which is not typical for me, but I guess it worked in this case.
Well, it's interesting, you know, it's because rhyming does give your song a certain kind of instant catchiness and a certain kind of a structure that makes it easy for people to come along with a ride. Mm-hmm. Songs that don't rhyme, I think, can seem more intimate, or they can just seem really sloppy.
Yeah.
It's a very hard line, and this one is the intimate because you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But
it's those songs where you raise the expectation of a rhyme coming, but then you don't do it. That it sounds kind of clumsy and awkward and weird, right? But a song like this, where it's set up in such a way that you're not expecting, you know, super catchy, perfect rhymes.
No, but I hit you with three internal rhymes. I end up burping haze, I gaze at you and see amazing times. So it's not like it's lacking that, but they're just not where you would necessarily expect them to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like prose.
Yeah.
It sounds like free verse.
It still is musical.
Yeah. Yes, so absolutely. Did you go through and sort of tweak the lyrics much? Or?
Yes. There, as fully formed as it was, there were certain things where I saw opportunities to clean it up. There's a couple lines that I wasn't crazy about, so I edited those. But for the most part, just a little bit of tweak. But you kind of have to do that.
Yeah.
And there's no real – because it's like verse, 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 verse with that little ooh-ooh bridge thing in the middle. You didn't think to have another part,
He would have yelled at me about having too many parts in the song.
it's
a question
what
I wrestle
would
with.
Phil have done?
That's what you should be all asking yourself all the time.
No,
opposite?
I'm just wondering if it was ever a question.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it never felt like
it needed something.
A bridge would have felt pasted on to me on this particular song.
Well, there is a break. Yeah. I mean, it is
there is
kind
a break
of a
with
bridge.
It's quite short.
But I guess,
it was a palate cleanser. I mean, there's a section that that was different enough in the verse that allowed you to come back into the verse.
Again, selfishly, it made sense to me. So that's what I went with, right? You know, just trying to write something that evoked what I was trying to. Whatever feelings I had.
Do you ever take these songs and sort of give them to someone else and get feedback on on stuff?
Okay. Yes, and then I probably ignore the feedback.
Okay.
you're the producer on the album.
Yeah.
Correct? You're a producer on all your albums?
Yeah, largely. In the past, Mark Planky from down in Windsor, who was runs Shark Tank Studios, runs the studio, he would offer an awful lot of great suggestions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I always said, you know, produced by with Mark, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is
like you said for this project, it's very inspiring for you.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah.
Right. And this is like you've recorded this at home.
Yeah.
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 Do you play most the instruments?
On this, there's a couple of.
Playing the drums?
No. The drums are.
Recorded?
Those are mechanical drums.
Right? Yeah, it's amazing.
the drums are
drummer.
Sorry,
Neil.
No, there you go. There's another. What we were talking about earlier, having a real drummer there would probably have goosed the songs in a way that I can't imagine. Right? Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Now there is guys out on the internet that you can actually send your file to, and they'll actually do live drums to them and send you back like either a mixed drum track or send you back the stems of each individual. Yeah.
That's absolutely true. I mean, even Blair's last record, I mean, he's got some great drummers on it. And that's exactly what he did. He sent it out. And, you know, I think Sasha Tukash, for example, is one of the guys who's a great drummer. I don't know. I don't know why I don't do that. I think it's because I don't want to bother people for my little vanity projects. You know, I don't consider myself like a real musician. So, like, why would I bother a real musician to do this? But I don't know. Sometimes I'm my own worst enemy.
Yeah. Well, it's. Well, I mean, there's also a cost involved too, and you know.
Yeah, and well, that's fair enough. There's fair enough. I can do this at my own leisure because it's already set up at home and. You know, realistically, it's very tough to market. You got to spend, you know, you got to spend probably three times more on promoting it than you would ever on recording it. And it's a commitment. You got to be prepared to tour. And that's how you make money these days is touring and merch and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You're not certainly not making it on mechanicals and radio play and all that kind
of stuff. Are you planning on doing some live shows after you?
Yeah, I'm going to do one on the 30th. Now, we just booked it today, actually, the 30th of May at the Moonshine. I'm going to try to schedule one in Windsor for the next day, Windsor being my hometown.
Where's the Moonshine?
In Oakville, sorry.
Okay.
And then I want to get a couple of shows lined up in Toronto. I just haven't got that far yet. Like I say, we just sort of picked the date today, the last couple of days, for the release. So we have to fill in the details.
Now. How many tracks on the album?
I think only nine. Hmm. It's only 32 minutes long from beginning to end. Yeah. So it's not a very long record, but it's meant to be one.
Yeah, it's continuous. Lesson. But how do you get that? Like, when you're playing it back on Spotify, there's going to be breaks between
the
songs.
There will be breaks. Yeah, we have – the mix will have to – or the actual CD will actually have to have the splits in it. Otherwise, it's going to be kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm. But and it's always fun.
Somebody's going to have to listen to me for 32 minutes. Which
That's
is,
right.
Yeah, yeah. You can upload it to YouTube as one continuous thing.
Yeah, right, I guess I could.
Or SoundCloud or whatever. I thought it was like the best thing ever when – iTunes finally made the gapless playback.
Then
I could listen to Abbey Road properly, finally.
Yeah, right. It drove me nuts when it wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
Prince did that with one of his records.
Sloan actually does that with a lot of their records.
They?
Yeah, with many of their records they've done that.
Yeah, I think the Love Sexy album by Prince is one track. So even if you go on iTunes now, it's like one song or one.
Oh, okay.
One file.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
You could offer that as a second download option.
Yes,
so you download it as one file,
a premium.
The way it was originally intended.
Yes,
always intended.
I always enjoyed listening to stuff on random, like CDs on random, because you get interesting pairings of songs that you wouldn't normally get, and it can be really fascinating.
Yeah, but some albums like Abbey Road, et cetera, like that second side of Abbey Road, it's almost impossible not to listen to that in order.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It's a way to listen to albums that you know really well with fresh ears, though.
Yeah, I agree.
And that sometimes is kind of neat.
Yeah. And doing what I did in this case, and you know, ultimately I didn't think that I would just release it as one file. I don't think that's going to happen. It was just how I heard it, and that's how we mixed it and mastered it. But people just don't listen to that for
a song.
Well,
that's
what
in the age of singles now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always been the age of singles, but
So it's just a sort of a goofy approach, but
it's a good challenge to as a songwriter, you know, to think of something larger as opposed to just doing the song, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a lost art. I mean, I think a lot of albums are just a collection of singles. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they're not great.
As they always were, actually. Initially, they were.
Well, there you go. That's true enough. And then people got fancy and tried to assemble all together, like Abbey Road, for example. Anyway, that's just how, like I say, it's how I heard it.
That's true. I think I hear the band.
The band has arrived.
That time.
And that is about all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thank you to our guest, Patrick Ballantyne.
Thank you, sir.
And you have a website, Patrick? Where's your website, Patrick Ballantyne?
PatrickBallantyne.com.
And you'll be front page.
That'll be up. Yeah, that'll be updating shortly. 30th of May at the Moonshine. Yes.
At the Moonshine. Go check them out in Oakville. And the album drops on May 31st, right?
Yes.
Just to be clear, it's Patrick Ballantyne with a Y, not an I.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, of course, check our show notes for the link, of course.
Yes.
And send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, email feedback at songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube, Song Talk Radio, or stop by the good old website, songtalk.ca. Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher.com, Spotify, Podcast Addict, and probably other ones we're not even aware of.
And we're everywhere.
And Woodcut.
Woodcut. You would cut that, wouldn't you?
Books.
We're available as lithographs.
And don't forget stone tablets. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song... Settle down. We mentioned on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us. Our next songwriters meetup is Thursday, April the 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transat Club. Come on by after work. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. And thank you to Vanessa Reland for handling the social media tonight.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa.
And on the tech board thingy, Linda Lavender.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
No problem.
And most thank of all, you, we'd like to thank you, the listener, wherever you may be. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
At the Phil Emery on Twitter.
You can follow Vanessa, Sunny_Vanessa on Twitter. Is that right, Vanessa? Yeah,
that's right.
Somewhere else. And Mr. Patrick, you have a...
PJRValentine at Twitter.com. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
At PJRValentine like on Twitter. Yeah. And don't follow Michael. He wants to be left alone. Or has that changed, Michael?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But okay. I'm considering joining this interweb. Yeah. I'll keep you posted.
Come back on the grid, Michael. We like to have you on the grid.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. On the grid? It's not
your personality now. You've got to do that.
Exactly. You know. And stop by the website.
And how about Linda? If people want to get in touch with Linda.
Yeah, at lindalavender.com or I am Linda Lavender on Instagram.
Yes, you are.
She's on Instagram.
And stop by the website, songtalk.ca. Browse our past shows. Find out how you can be a guest. Keep on writing and have a nice day.
Thank you,
everyone. Yes, rock and roll.